Good morning. It is 8:07 on this Friday, November 11th. Let's see, what else do we know about the date? Donald Trump is the president-elect, and on today's show, we go on with the show. We'll speak with Robin Bravender, who writes in Scientific America about Trump's EPA appointment. The guy who's going to lead his transition team is a prominent climate change denier. So here we go. We'll have Jay Rath here to talk about the very sudden change in format at the mic, which was doing, of course, political progressive talk radio. Was it all progressive? It was mostly progressive. And they have switched over to Christmas music very suddenly. We'll figure out how and why. Or maybe we won't. It sounds pretty unknowable about why they would do such a thing. But we'll ask the questions. Now we turn our attention to some of the first things that we know about what Donald Trump is actually planning for his term. This breaking in Scientific American, I believe borrowed from Climate Wire possibly, but Myron Ebel seems to be the guy that is going to be heading up Donald Trump's EPA transition. He is a top climate scientist and the author of the article that broke this. Robin Bravender is here with us on the phone. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you holding up?
Pretty well, thanks.
Can you clarify? This has it's a little confusing. It has a very early date on it from Climate Wire, like September 26th, before we knew anything about this, and now it's in Scientific American where it's getting a lot of attention.
That's right. So I'm a reporter at E&E News in D.C. Scientific American runs some of our articles. Back in September, we knew that the Trump transition team was already getting ready to go, and they had already picked Myron Ebel from the Competitive Enterprise Institute to head up their EPA transition team.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so this isn't exactly new news, but it's much more important news now that we know that it's actually going to matter instead of being
right.
a weird
People
fantasy.
Are paying attention now.
Yeah. Okay. Do we know anything new now, or is this just is it trending because it matters so much now? Is it
people are starting
news?
To care? I mean, I think back in September, a Trump victory was still a long shot, so people weren't really paying attention. But now, Ebel and others on the Trump transition team are actually getting down to work. So Donald Trump just wrote on Twitter, "Busy day in New York. They're getting ready to announce some top government positions." So that's all because of the work of Ebel and others who are working in D.C. He and others are expected to go into federal agencies perhaps next week, so they need to get credentials to go into these agencies. But Myron Ebel might be heading into the EPA next week, and he'll be interviewing top administration officials from the Obama administration, talking about all the things they want to change about what the Obama administration's done for the past 8 years.
And what is, to just stay with Ebel for a moment, what is his scientific pedigree? What are his degrees and his background?
He is an academic, so he works at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, which is a nonprofit. It's been pretty heavily criticized by the left. They've gotten funding from fossil fuel groups, and a lot of environmentalists and others say, they do the bidding. Ebel and others have said, it doesn't matter where we get our funding, we're doing academic work. But he has said, he calls it global warming alarmism. He's questioned the role that humans play in global warming, and he says he opposes energy rationing policies. His academic background, he's got a bachelor's from Colorado College and a master's from the London School of Economics. So he's coming at this from sort of an economic perspective more than anything else.
And just how outlying are his opinions, if you put it in a percentage?
I don't know exact percentages. The climate science community has long been critical of him. He's been sort of one of the more outspoken climate skeptics. He's often, you can go back and see clips dating back for years of him debating prominent climate scientists about the science. So he's been around for a while and is well known. His pick for the EPA transition was widely seen. One climate scientist called him the fox guarding the hen house over there.
You know,
sending a statement by the Trump administration.
For those of us who, we've all seen this before with Ronald Reagan and James Watt as the Interior Secretary, where it was kind of shocking back then, or maybe it was just because I was young. But now it feels like, oh, yes, we've seen this, the fox guarding the hen house, put people in charge. And you know, and that's playing out in other positions around the environment, too, right? He's appointing a lot of oil guys. Can you tell me more about other appointments and where those people come from?
Yeah, well, right now there's just a lot of speculation about who he's going to pick for his cabinet. We know who's running energy for him in the transition team. So we've got Mike Catanzaro has been a longtime Capitol Hill aide. He was working for Speaker Boehner for a while doing energy issues. We've got energy lobbyist Mike McKenna is running the DOE transition. We've got a George W. Bush administration interior official, David Barnhart, doing the interior transition. And then, you know, when they come to picking cabinet secretaries, a lot of people think they're going to look for energy CEOs for some of these jobs. Harold Hamm is an oil tycoon. He's been talked about for the energy department. Rumors are floating that Sarah Palin might be a pick for the interior department, although I'm not hearing much of that in D.C. circles, but who knows? Anything's possible. She's been a supporter of Trump. And then for EPA, you know, it's hard to say. There's some speculation that Trump might pick an attorney general from a state that's been unfriendly to Obama's climate policies to lead the EPA.
Do you think it seems like the strategy often, and not just for Donald Trump, when you want to undermine an agency like this, is to appoint somebody that believes the opposite of what the agency was created to do, but not to get rid of it for the most part?
We have heard Trump previously say he did want to get rid of EPA, although he's since walked back on that a little bit, and folks think that politically, you know, that might have just been rhetoric, and it would be too hard politically to actually do. But he has promised some big reforms there. And, yeah, there have been a lot of comparisons to the Reagan administration, and folks in these agencies aren't quite sure what to expect. Talking to EPA employees in particular this week, they're pretty nervous.
Right. You can imagine at the very least they would have a turnover of staff after having such a radical change of leadership. Where is Donald Trump on climate change these days? I know, you know, he tweeted out that it was basically a Chinese plot to undermine American, you know, industry. And then he denied that he did that. Evidently, he didn't like that stance anymore during the debate. And so now where is he where he can actually say whatever he likes? You know,
he's gone back and forth on sort of how strongly he's come out against the science. I think people don't really know quite where he stands, and we're waiting to see sort of what he does in office. But in terms of his rhetoric on the regulations, you know, he said he wants to cancel the Paris Climate Accord. He wants to scrap Obama's Clean Power Plan, which is a controversial rule to cut greenhouse gases from power plants, which was, you know, one of the hallmarks of the Obama administration. So at least regulatorily and when it comes to the international deal, we can expect sort of a U-turn from what the Obama administration has done.
What do you make of this in the context of the lack of talk about climate change in the election? Like, for instance, not coming up in how many did it not come up in any debates?
No, it didn't. Yeah. There was a lot of pressure, but yeah, there weren't any questions about it. Which, you know, might mean that this just wasn't what was on voters' minds right now. Certainly there's a lot of people on the left who care very deeply about this, but, you know, for some of the swing voters who decided this election, that might have just not been what they care about. They care about jobs and the economy more.
So he may feel even, I mean, I don't think he's feeling a lot of constraints about anything he wants to do, but he may feel even freer to swing an axe, given that it didn't even come up in the election.
Yeah, and he's got, you know, he's going to have the House and the Senate, both Republican, likely going to soon appoint at least one more new justice to the Supreme Court. So he's got a mandate and some wiggle room to get through some pretty broad policies.
So this gives the environmental movement, all the agencies, nonprofits that are working on environmental issues, some time to prepare. Do you have a sense of what's going on there?
Yeah, I think right now people are still a little shell-shocked as far as I can tell, but I think they're revving up. If you go, at least yesterday, if you went to the Sierra Club's website, there was a little button to donate. So they're preparing to get active. The folks I've talked to have said, you know, they would have much preferred to have a Democratic administration and continue some of these Obama administration policies. But they're ready to fight. They've done it before, as you said, the Reagan administration. They've done it in the Bush administration. So they have a playbook. They're dusting that off right now.
Yeah, that is the question. question of the day. So what should we be looking for from Trump? You said that there will be more announcements even later today.
Yeah, well, I was just looking back so that President Obama started making some cabinet picks late November in 08. By December, we knew some of the energy picks. So, you know, in the next couple of weeks, we'll see a lot of these names coming out right now. There's a lot of speculation. People are talking about it. The transition team is being flooded by resumes, folks who weren't necessarily on board with Trump before all of a sudden coming back. So they've got a lot of names and resumes to comb through. So, yeah, we'll start seeing some decisions probably in the next couple of weeks.
All right, Robin Bravender, thanks you so much for updating us on what's going on with Donald Trump and his appointments to for his EPA transition team and more. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Have a good day.
We're going to still explore on the show why the mic turned over to Christmas music. Well, why are we playing that? Especially when we just lost the mic to Christmas music. 92.1, the home of Devil's Advocate Radio, and people like Matt Rothschild regularly appearing, and so much progressive talk in Madison, in a place where, hey, there wasn't a whole lot more of it out there in the community, and now that is gone. And that's why we were playing Alvin and the Chipmunks. Jay Rath wrote about this for Isthmus. It appeared on November 9th, so... Here is Jay with us this morning. He's been writing in Madison for decades. He's been a guest on this show probably 20 years ago the first time.
Breakfast special, yeah.
Yeah, long time. Yeah, so welcome back. And what the holiday music?
Yeah, that was kind of my response, too. It was the morning after the election. There was Mitch Hank, local longtime broadcaster. Mitch Hank did his show. And at 11 o'clock, 11 a.m., that was it. That was the last of local programming on WXXM-FM, which we had called the mic. It is now Madison's home for the holidays.
And it's interesting the way you put it there. It's the end of local programming, because sure, we're focused on holiday music, but it's not like they're bringing in local people with their favorite take on holiday music. This is also a switch from local programming to something canned and easy and national to feed in.
Yeah, it's a bit of a... interesting changeover, and I'd been looking into this for a couple of weeks already. This caught me by surprise. The mic had already been apparently changing its format. They were doing a lot more with sports broadcasting in the evening. I'm a big fan of national commentator Alan Colmes, and they would preempt his show or interrupt his show. So I thought something strange is going on. Women's volleyball, I'm all for. But NASCAR and Milwaukee Bucks, that was a bit of a surprise.
And the NASCAR might have been a little bit more of a harbinger because, of course, that's kind of a symbolizes a more conservative viewpoint generally.
Well, perhaps. But even so, there appears to be no sports programming on the new 92.1. There's no local news. I couldn't even hear local traffic and weather this morning. Maybe it's still there and I just missed it. But... yeah, there's no local content. It's 24 hours Christmas music. And whatever else you think about progressive commentary, it's a little bit early for Christmas music.
Well, the timing is odd. So, and we can make guesses as to why they did it now. But had they done it, say, the Wednesday before, the day before Thanksgiving, we would have said, oh, there are iHeartMedia, and we should explain to people that that's basically some kind of descendant or iteration of Clear Channel. They're always changing their ownership, but, you know, you can put them in the Clear Channel bucket. They're just, you know, they wanted to make a change, and now they're going to do holiday music because you make a lot of money doing that. But doing it now, the day after the election, were they just trying to kind of bury it in all the confusion of what was out in the media so that there wouldn't be as much criticism of it?
I don't know.
So we wouldn't do this very interview we're doing now?
That could be. I doubt that, because the day after the election would be when they would have their most listenership, one would expect, listening for news and analysis.
But somebody that wants to complain about it and make an issue in the media is going to have trouble because they're so many other stories crowding for media attention.
That could be. That could be. As it was, I still have not gotten a response from their programming director, Tim Scott. We did, at Isthmus, receive a press release from the president of the local iHeart company. And yes, iHeart used to be Clear Channel. iHeart is one of three companies that own almost all radio stations in town.
Yes, and so we should say that Keith Brattle, the iHeart Media Madison Market President, did address the issue in the press release. He did go on the record making a statement about it, so we can let people know what he said. So
he said, "We're excited to spread cheer throughout the community with popular holiday music on WXXM. Madison's home for the holidays, 92.1 Best FM, is a great way for our listeners to get into the holiday spirit."
And so what do we think he means by cutting off progressive talk the day after election with an arch-conservative being elected to office? What do you think that statement means in that context?
I do not know. I do not know. I do not know.
Perhaps nothing?
We should note that the mic, they attempted to change format at the mic once before. I think it was back in 2006. And there was a very loud protest, not only from listeners, but advertisers. At that time, they wanted to make the mic, or 92.1, into a sports station. They fought that off, and it remained progressive programming.
I think it's a really interesting point about the advertisers protesting there, because at the mic, you didn't get advertisers that just said, like, hey, this is popular and it's the right demographic for us. Let's throw some ad money at it. Because they were perceived as being a little risky to advertise on the mic because they took real progressive stances on the shows. Any advertiser was really pretty committed to being there, I think, unlike a lot of other channels.
Yes. At iHeart, you can buy advertising in several different ways, as at any number of stations. You can buy time on all stations at once that iHeart owns in this market. You can buy station by station. If you buy the mic alone, it's targeted, yes, because it has a small signal, small audience. Longtime Madisonians will remember that frequency used to be WMAD-FM, and their transmitter was out in Sun Prairie. They had a very small listenership, but it was popular. It was popular. So I would say that advertisers, local advertisers, knew that was an audience they wanted to attract specifically.
Yeah. So, I had a thought driving in. I turned it on and listened to it for a little bit, and I don't know that the progressive cause is necessarily lost here. You listen to Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and it's a story about disability and about mocking disability. And then Santa, who is basically like the president, because he takes a stand and he makes Rudolph, puts him in a very visible and useful role, and he basically stops all the other reindeers from making fun of Rudolph.
Good point. And let's not forget the Island of Misfit Toys as well.
Right.
All those freeloaders.
And I would challenge all the musicians that listen to this show to write some of those songs, and we'll broker that. We'll send those into them so that we can continue progressive exploration of issues on through their holiday format. Donald Trump, don't be a Krampus, be a Santa. Somebody can write that out there.
Could be. Variations on the Grinch. And then there's Jesus himself. Many possibilities, I suppose.
Yeah, what a controversial guy, you know, and so many different ways to explore his message or the subverting of his message through Christmas. I don't think all is lost there.
None of this is included in my article, by the way. But yes, there are vast fields to investigate with.
Right, and so I hope that musicians will take that seriously. We'd love to send them some music to play that will continue exploring progressive issues through the holiday format.
Wonderful idea.
Do you think we'll find out anything more about this? They haven't responded to you in time for the article. Is this going to? I suppose they don't owe anybody anything, and I suppose they can do whatever they like.
No, it's a private business. Many listeners, I'm sure, will not miss Stephanie Miller or Alan Combs or Bill Press because of the prevalence of streaming or podcasts. They'll just get the content in different ways.
Mitch Hank is also podcasting his show.
Mitch Hank, yeah. Mitch will remain on podcasting. I worry for his numbers though. He depends solely on local advertising, and without the extra numbers added by broadcast, I worry about him. A very good guy. He was bounced from WIBA AM and managed to come back at the mic. So
I had a sense about Mitch and his audience that there was a little bit more crossover and mixing of folks that not necessarily your usual suspects of progressive audience, that he had some more maybe towards a more conservative audience as well in there.
I think so very much. I was concerned when they first brought him on because I thought it broke format for the station having him on. He always argued that he was down the middle, and I'm sure he believes that. And as a listener who was interested in progressive content, I certainly found great illumination in the calls from his conservative listeners. It was a very interesting view of the electorate.
Yeah, it depends on the day and the issue that you get him on where he falls.
Yeah. But Matt Rothschild was a regular on his program. So was Mike Ivey, my former colleague at the Capital Times. A lot of well-known people on Mitch's show.
So Nellie's question out here, our phone answer on the Friday Buzz, was, are they afraid of going at Donald Trump and they're just throwing in the towel and playing Christmas music?
Well, that's how I opened up my article. It certainly seems to be adding insult to injury to make the change over the very day when people are still waking up to the news that Trump had won. It seems very odd timing. Seems to me a very unusual change in format, especially so far ahead of Christmas.
Well, of course, the question we haven't asked that's huge is what happens after Christmas? Are they going to be the first station to play Christmas 365 days a year?
Well, that's the question. Of course, they'll have to undergo yet another format change. This will not please advertisers. They won't know what they're buying. I just don't understand it. And until they're ready to talk, none of us will know.
And again, what has the advertiser's response been this time? Do you have any idea, given that the advertisers actually reversed the format change last time, and this time they were buying progressive talk, and now they're getting Christmas music?
I haven't checked with any advertisers yet, but I should. And that's a great follow-up idea, yes. Yes.
Huh. All right. Well, and I apologize for reading the canned quote from Keith Brattle at iHeartMedia, because that was just an ad for the new Christmas format over there. But
it was
kind of hilarious in the context of the questions on people's minds and the answer they're basically giving.
Well, we want to make sure they have their voice, and that was their official statement. That's what they have to say about the matter.
Right, but since it's shilling, we don't absolutely have to read it. But we did. There you go. So, all right. Well, thanks, Jay Rath, for joining us. You can find out more the article that we're talking about, The Mic Replaces Progressive Talk with Christmas Music. And if you find out more, we'd be interested, especially if there's pushback from advertisers or anything like that.
I'll look for that and let you know. Incidentally, this is not in the newspaper. It's in isthmus.com, our website, if readers want to look into this and read the article themselves.
All right. isthmus.com. Thanks, Jay Rath.
Thank you.